You could have heard this episode 1 week early on our Patreon, patreon.com/indieheadspodcast. But joining us for as low as $1 a month, you'll receive episodes early, gain access to our Discord server, and get yourself an Indie Heads podcast sticker. All of our upcoming episodes will go to our Patreon. $48 sort of hits our public podcast feeds. But if you're hearing this via our Patreon feed, we thank you so much for your support.
We especially want to thank our Real Ones patrons, including Becca Etienne, George Mikowski, James Boss, Holiday Kirk, Marcy Anime, Chance Holdup, Dwayne Mothman, Josiah Duncan, Jenna, Matt Cameron, Grant in the Back of My Dragula, Pablo Escobar's Hippos, Jeremy Bull, Rinaldi Newpin, Heath and Catherine, Parker Gross, Last Man on Earth 01, Andrew Grieve, Listen Up Nerds, Matthew Taylor, Breen Hare, Drew Wharton, I Like Books, Sarah Moore, Griff Ballard, Max Kibazinski, Mark Berry, Cal 50, on August 8, 2004, a tour bus belonging to the Dave Matthews Band dumped 800 pounds of human waste onto a sightseeing boat. Chris Wade, Midwest Maxwell, Kevin John, Jake Wald, Grant, Keep Autism Weird, Rob Marino, Max, Dylan, Zach, Gavin Varney Freak, and Maze Farms. To become a Real One, consider supporting us for $5 a month on Patreon and receive a bonus episode every month and get a shout out at the top of the pod. Anyways though, enjoy the episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to FYC, an Indie Heads podcast series, going over new music, the very sporadic series we do. I'm here, Maddie, along with my good friend, Delaney Mothman, making a special guest appearance. But Delaney is not the only person here, as we are joined today by Truth Club. We're joined by Travis, Cam, and Yvonne from Truth Club. Welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, thank you so much.
Very glad to have you guys on. I will say the last band that we had on the series just recently broke up, so I'm really hoping that we do not cause such an ordeal to happen. I do not want there to be an Indie Heads podcast FYC curse, which has already taken Strange Ranger and hopefully no other bands. So so just I'm gonna jinx the curse, hopefully. If I mention it offhand, just the curse will be jinxed. It'll be no more. We can move on. But me personally speaking, I've been a big fan of you guys since your record in 2019, Not an Exit, which I still maintain is one of the best debut records of the last decade or so. That's a record that at the time I was like, why is nobody paying attention to this band? This band is awesome and amazing. So I'm very glad that you guys have been having like a hell of a 2023 so far, like just tons of great press. Shows are doing great, hopefully, fingers crossed. I'm glad that you guys are having a great year, because you know, when I first heard rumblings about this new record from our mutual friend Mike Colo from Sipsman, I was like, oh man, this is gonna be the year of Truth Club. And I really do feel like it has been the year of Truth Club. So I guess my first question to you guys is, you know, now that we're like about a month after the release, you guys just got off a tour with Squirrel Flower. I mean, how do you guys feel about the release of the record and how people are reacting to it?
I mean, I think it's been kind of, as you said, I mean, I feel like it has been a hell of a 2023, has been a hell of a year. It's been a year of Truth Club, which has felt really rewarding. I think that the response has been like much more overwhelmingly positive than I like could have imagined. I mean, like, I just try not, in context like of releasing music, I try not to have expectations, like, you know, because I don't want to set myself up for disappointment, because I'm someone who is very sensitive to disappointment. So but I feel like I've not had to put myself in the position of trying to you know, self-soothe or anything, because like, yeah, the response has been just very overwhelmingly positive. I mean, we've, like you said, we've gotten to play like a lot of really cool shows this year. And like, yeah, like all the press and everything everyone's had to say about the record so far has made me feel really good. And I feel just really good about the writing process and like recording the record. It was like a really positive experience and like felt really fulfilling. And so like, I'm glad that that's translated, you know, like that a fun record to make has translated to like music that it seems like a lot of people seem to enjoy as much as we did making it. Yeah.
Yeah. That it's very funny because we, Delaney and I, we were like chatting beforehand because it's great to hear that it was a good time making the record, because, you know, there's definitely moments where bands like making records, it's just really fucking tough, and they come out of it, you know, like they just went through, like they went through no man's land in World War One. Because, you know, Delaney, we were talking where at the same time, this is definitely a record that's like very, very dark in at times, or at least there's definitely a bit of a, like a cloud over this record in terms of the mood, which again, I should say it's a cloud that I love, because, you know, I'm a depressed motherfucker and I love depressed motherfucking music. So Delaney, you had a kind of like a similar question where, you know, despite there being kind of a cloud of sorts over parts of this record, there definitely is moments of light. So I'll let Delaney kind of, cause this is something that she brought up that I really, really agreed with on her assessment of the record.
Yeah, dude. To me, the album feels very, very accurate to my own mental health struggles, which I feel like I don't find often. Like usually, things are really like faffy or kind of sensationalized in a way. But this is like, I would show this album to someone and be like, this is what seasonal depression feels like, by the way. But that being said, there's these few moments of like that feel like little shreds of hope. I would note one at the end of Exit Cycle. And there's also a lyric in Is This Working? Is there still a blossom yearning to return to form and carve a path again? And those moments to me feel really important on the album. Y'all have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, I think that it's important. I mean, like, I think I've talked some, you know, and like throughout, like being asked questions about like lyrical content and stuff and sort of like the overall, like emotional quality of the record. Like, it's obviously very dark, or it can't, and it goes to like pretty dark places at times. And, you know, I think I've talked about writing lyrics and like the theme as kind of being like an exercise and kind of going back after like a period of pretty like immense depression and like sort of looking at what I was like writing about or thinking about and then trying to like the exercise of like trying to draw from that when I wasn't in a place of like, you know, in that just like doleful place of and then just kind of like, you know, compartmentalize those things into songs, you know, and I think that I was able to sort of like write about those themes, I think, in a more self-aware way of like, you know, it's like if you're going to share music, and if you're going to share music, especially that's like dark, I think it's important to sort of like tread the line, you know, like toe a line between like what is like helpful and like, in a way, and like what is like, because if the whole point of writing a song, like if I'm, the point was to share these songs, which that was the point, you know, like, you know, there's some like darkness that can be a bit grotesque or just like, just doesn't feel helpful to share, you know, it just like, it pulls everyone else down too, you know, or it's like, and I don't think that that's very helpful, you know, maybe it's helpful for me to sit around and write a song like that. And it's like really upsetting and horrible, and I just that's an exercise for myself, but like for shared music that doesn't feel helpful. And just to speak to the point of like those moments or whatever, like I think that it was cool to be able to write from a removed place, because it's like I think I could inject a little bit of that hope, or like it doesn't feel unnatural. Like it didn't feel like, oh, I like need to, like it felt like a natural sort of like conclusion, or like writing from this place of like reflection rather than being like immersed in those sort of feelings, you know. Does that make sense?
Exactly. Yeah, because I mean, Exit Cycle especially is a song that like really, really, like I think that encapsulates the entire record so well, of all the light and darkness, and just in many ways the like leveling up you guys have done since your last record, which, like, again, I love the first record a lot, and I love this record also. And there's definitely like a scrappiness of that first album that is not missing on this record. There's definitely still sort of, especially in places like Blue Eternal, for example, where you still have that kind of that scrappiness, that you know, sort of the like almost wiry kind of post-punk influence. But in general, this record feels so much more it's so much more musically ambitious, but it doesn't come off that way on first listen. Like, it's a very subtle ambitiousness that you guys are going for, like really going for big emotional moments, like at the end of Exit Cycle, with some like the melodies and harmonies. The outro, Is This Working, where, you know, a lot of the songs are kind of, you know, your standard lay songs, and then Is This Working is this sort of like this you know, almost near 6 minute epic that kind of jumbles all over the place in terms of like time signatures and melodies and all this stuff. So I guess in the recording of this record, you know, compared to the last one, like, were you guys really tempting to like, hey, we want to, you know, really level up our songwriting? Or did it's like, hey, we kind of have this nice thing going on this first one, let's just kind of see how things go and sort of make a natural progression of sorts, you know, on the next one. But I'm intrigued by, I guess sort of the songwriting process for how this new record came together.
I think in a way it just kind of like naturally happened to like sort of culminate into this thing where it was almost like we were all like super, super present and super ready to like make this thing happen, because like we had this moment like during COVID and during the lockdowns and all of that, like we were sort of like taking a mini hiatus. I mean, like at the end of 2019, like we were like sort of burnt out a little bit, like coming off of like touring and playing shows off of Not an Exit. And then it's just like doing a lot. And then like the quarantines happened, like COVID happened, and we just kind of like our living situations like kept us apart from each other. And we're like, that's totally fine. Let's take this moment to like breathe. Yeah. And then like we snap back, like when like we all got vaccinated and whatnot, like we snap back and we're just like, it's time. Like it's time to do this thing again. And like
much like the song down. It's Time by Truth Club.
Gosh dang it. that comes up all the time. Like every time I say it's time now, I cannot not hear that. And it's ruined me. But yeah, so like I think we like really all kind of like, you know, took a step away and took a breather, and then like after we came back together after quarantine and whatever, like, yeah, it's kind of like it feels right. Like we're all ready. We're all kind of like hankering to do this, to like make some songs and to like do this with some serious intention, which like maybe feeds into a lot of like what you're saying right now, is like we had that breath away, and then like we kind of realigned our sights a little bit like with that breath away, and then like we all snap back in, we're just like, yeah, let's do this thing. And like that definitely is, I think, a contributor to that like feeling of it being like a little bit more like focused. Because I think individually we all got a little bit more focused during that time period. And then also, I mean, subsequently, like Travis was saying, like a lot of the lyrical content does sort of like bounce around these like darker points, these things that are like up in the air around a lot of our like mindscapes, like our mental areas and whatnot. And it's like, a lot of the content does sort of like bounce around that. And I think during that time, like we were feeling a lot of that, like collectively. And I think it just like, it was just like all there in a sense. And we kind of, yeah, I guess brought it together. And then like Travis really conjured up a lot of like the emotional content of the lyrics. And it just like, yeah, it made sense. It happened. It happens very naturally, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, this record just sounds like a band that is just the chemistry is so tight between, you know, everyone, and it just sounds, there's just so much drive behind the record. And you know, you hear some music from maybe more established acts or just anyone, and sometimes you can kind of listen in and be like, there's just, you know, you listen, you're like, just like, why are you guys making this record? Like there's no drive here. But this record is the complete opposite, where it's like, this is a band that is determined to just we're gonna fucking do this. And despite it being such a dark record, I think obviously you have the lighter undertones in the lyrics sometimes, you know, the clouds opening up, but also I just think just the band chemistry is just so on point that I think that really, really drives home, like, you guys being such an awesome band. I don't know why I'm having to have all these signifiers, like, you guys are amazing, you guys are great. I'm not being held at gunpoint. You guys make great music. I'm not going to turn my laptop camera and there's a guy holding a gun to my head. Mike Kalla holding a gun to my head saying nice things, or your publicist Tom with the on the other side also holding a gun to my head.
They don't seem like gun guys.
Not really. I mean, you know, Tom's Canadian and Mike, I mean, he's been in North Carolina for a while, but even then, you know, I don't know if North Carolina has like a strong gun culture or anything compared to it like does. Other southern states.
Oh, it does.
Well, then
there's a little funny crossing the border. The border person at the kiosk where you cross the freaking border was like, y'all are from North Carolina? And we're like, yeah. And they were like, you really don't have guns in your car? And we're like, no. And you're like, really?
Oh my god. Well, I'm moving to North Carolina in January, so that makes me really, really excited to move and be ready for all the gun culture I'm about to run into. But yeah,
Maddie can finally shoot. I can finally go to the shooting range.
I can finally go to the shooting range. I've never shot a gun before. I've never shot a gun. I mean, I mean airsoft guns and paintball guns, but like live ammunition, never done it.
I'll show you how to do it. It's not, it's easy. It also is good because like proper gun safety, it like makes, I mean, guns are, can be bad, but proper gun etiquette, right? It like sort of desensationalizes it a bit and puts it into context. If you ever want to be taught how to responsibly fire a firearm, let me know. I'll be in North Carolina. Promoting the gun culture, apparently, on r/IndieHeads podcast. No, I'm just kidding.
We're promoting gun culture and running from the chase. Because it's weird. Because I ordered the record, and in the record was a small handgun. It was really weird that you guys did that bundle. No. it's just. I mean, it makes sense. You know, gimmicks these days, you gotta do what you can, but
yeah, this super exclusive promo item handgun, the Truth Club gun. Yeah, that's
like
totally...
you got a bootleg copy of the record.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, I mean, I don't know, I mean, maybe someone was, you know, thinking of me, they saw my name, or it's like, that man needs a handgun, or it's a gun running situation gone wrong where they put the guns in the wrong package. Like, you were supposed to put the guns with the DVD players, you put it with the vinyl. What's going on? That's my impression of a North Carolina gangster. If the North Carolina mob exists, that was a joke. Please do not come after me.
They'll never look in the Red Eye warehouse. They'll never look there. Yeah.
What's hilarious is our record came with a magic card, a Magic the Gathering card, yes, instead, which is pretty far away from a gun.
I feel like Magic seems like it's getting more popular amongst bands these days, because I just saw Foxing in St. Louis and they were selling Magic cards. So, you know, I think we got to set up a Foxing versus Truth Club Magic battle and see who the best band is between the two of you when it comes to playing Magic the Gathering.
Honestly, that's kind of sick.
It would be cool if we could like assemble enough like artists to do something similar to like a celebrity basketball type game, but it's like a Magic the Gathering tournament. That would be a lot. I think that would be a lot of fun. Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, Post Malone's already there.
That's $1 million idea.
Oh yeah, Post Malone. He's our superstar. He's who we get early on. Bring in $1 million investments to this wonderful idea. We're cooking here. I genuinely do think that it could be like a celebrity all-star Magic the Gathering. I think there's a lot of potential there.
Truth Club versus Post Malone.
Posty, if you're listening to this, hit us up. Let's play some magic.
Delaney, did you have any? I feel like I've been taking up the space here, so I'm more than happy to pass it off to you with more questions about the new record, Running from the Chase.
Hey man, I'm right with you. Everything you're saying is my thoughts also, but I was curious about the album cover. Like, was that sort of y'all's idea? Did that come from the photographer? How collaborative was that?
It was like collaborative in the sense that I think with like, it's always approval by committee, right? Like, I think like I kind of had this vague idea of like us in the water, like in water or something. And I kind of like ran that by, I was like, what do y'all think of this? I didn't really have any reference photos or like, I'm not a visual artist really. So I didn't draw anything up, but I just had this vague idea. And I was like, our very talented friend Walker, I was like, I think Walker can sort of actualize this. And I was like, do y'all want to like try and do it? And everyone was like, yeah, that sounds cool. And then we had a really fun day where we just swam in the James River and floated.
Fun and exhausting.
It was fun and really exhausting. Yeah, we went to Richmond where our friend Walker was living at the time. And yeah, he somehow like swam out into the middle of the river under a bridge with a camera in his hand and didn't get it wet, and then climbed up on like the jetty, or not jetty, but whatever it is beneath the bridge, and stood up there while we swam up current and then floated down. And we got a really cool picture. We like looked at them the next morning and everyone was like, oh, this is what you're talking about? Like, this was like the, and I was like, yeah, this is better than I even thought it could have been. So yeah, we got so lucky with that. It was really cool. Like, Walker did an amazing job.
It's a really, really good album cover. It's definitely one of my favorites of the year. And also it's very, very fitting for the album, which is, you know, what you want. It all feels very unpretentious, just the whole thing, while being ambitious, like Maddie said. Which,
thank God.
A plus.
Yeah, that's nice to hear, for sure.
Yeah, because it, you know, it is, I mean, I would say it's yeah, one of the best album covers of the year. I'm very glad that the Indie Kids now have another canonical swimming album cover next to Slint's Spiderland. I'm glad that... that when people do make that there's another album they can point to being like, hey, we're not copying Slint, we're copying Truth Club instead. Because if I have to see any fucking image of a band swimming and then get compared to Spiderland, I don't know what I'm gonna do. It's sickening. So I'm very glad that there's another canonical swimming album cover out there. I did want to ask, I did read a Talkhouse interview that you guys did talking about some of your musical inspirations about the record. And I mean, one thing, again, this is a music podcast, so we'll talk about music. I love it because I feel like very rarely you really do ask bands about the music that they love and they really like. So I'm just going to rattle off two of the ones that really stood out to me because these are two of my favorite artists right now. Lamelda, I saw that and I was like, okay, I knew this band was for me, because if this band fucks with Lamelda, we're in good company, because I love Lamelda. I literally have her album tattooed on my arm here. I have the Things album cover. So I mean, how did you guys discover Lamelda, and you know, what does her music mean to you?
I feel like I literally remember seeing, I think it was maybe Thanks when it first came out, literally on like, I mean, like, fuck Spotify, but on like the Spotify, like Discovery Weekly, yeah, or whatever, like back when that first came out. And I remember like just being like totally captivated. I think it was, I don't remember what song it was, but I just remember being completely captivated and like just starting to listen to it. I think around the same time as like Howdy and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Or like, I don't know. Wow. I feel like my brain is flooding with memories from being like post college, like, and like, but yeah, I think it, yeah, I don't know. I just remember just being like totally captivated by her voice and melodies and just like musical choices and lyrics, like the whole, I guess that's kind of everything. but yeah, LaMelda rules.
Yeah. I mean, what I love about her record, and I think it kind of translates to how this record sounds, is that there's such in intimacy where listening to it feels like you are conversating with a friend, but it doesn't feel like, you know, word of, you know, like stream of consciousness or anything like that. It just feels like, hey, I'm in the room with you guys, like as you're just playing the album through. And like, I feel like that's really, really rare these days, just because either it's too lo-fi or, you know, it's too on the nose. And I think you guys really like hit the nail on the head of like intimacy, but not like so close to you that, you know, you can barely breathe, you know. But that does lead me to another artist that I was going to mention. Travis, you mentioned Spear the Beehive, which of course I also love Spear the Beehive. I love that record in 2021. And I'm curious how like sort of the more, I guess, in some ways like psychedelic, almost shoegaze electronic soundscapes kind of translated to this record, which I would say like in terms of an overall feeling, I definitely understand where you're coming from, but I do think sonically, like, I'm curious to hear what you picked up from that record that kind of translated to your own songwriting.
I think it's kind of like, because I don't really know if, I mean, I could say literally that like a whole lot of, in terms of like experimenting with like instrumentation, like translated from that. Like, I mean, I really want to get into like sampling and like synth stuff and like, for like, I want to get a 404 and start messing with stuff like that. I mean, all of the sample based stuff that they do is like so cool, and a lot of other artists do that really effectively and really well. But I think the thing that, just being like a really long term fan of theirs, that I've always thought has been so cool about their records is just like the atmosphere and like the texture. Like, it's not, I think what I picked up on or just sort of like really paid attention to is just like the nuance of yeah, like of atmosphere and texture. Like, it, even if it was a guitar, or like wasn't a guitar, like doing something, just like how from release to release, it's very clear, like that there's like a palette, like there's like a sonic palette that they choose to utilize. And like throughout the entire record, you can kind of hear those elements like being showcased and like used again. And like each record, I feel like has like its own distinct sort of solid sonic palette. Like, you know, it's like Pleasure Suck is like really smeared, you know what I mean? It's like mm-hmm. really hazy and like woolly, and you know, like like, oh my god, like Hypnic Jerks is like really, it feels really lush and vibrant, you know, and like all of like the pad, like the synth pads and stuff, and like a lot of those like really delicate acoustic guitars, all of that, like all of those arrangements are really filled out. And obviously like the Entertainment Death is like so like jagged and like harsh, but also like really vibrant. And I don't know, I just feel like when I listen to them, it's like very clear, because I always listen to their records front to back when I listen to them, and it's just like very cool to me how intentional it seems like they are with this sort of, yeah, like the sonic palettes that they choose to like, they use to like define the sound of each record. And I feel like when we were writing these songs, I like really wanted, it was just like the notion of like cohesion that I wanted to like make sure was like integral, you know, like I wanted to make sure the integrity of like the songs being cohesive with one another was maintained, and like doing that through atmosphere and texture, you know?
Yeah. Again, I fully agree on all fronts on that. Even I'm not a musician, but the way they're able to kind of it's just like, I just don't understand how they are able to put all these like disparate elements together into like one cohesive song, and it doesn't sound like shit. Like it sounds like this one cohesive whole that's just made out of, you know, all these completely separate weird parts, and it all like comes together like really naturally and beautifully. And Kim, I don't want to leave you out of this either. You mentioned Lulu, and I really love that Lulu record from last year. So I'm curious, like why you love that record and how you think that kind of translated to the recording of this record.
Yeah, I think I feel kind of interesting in this spot because indie rock and like alternative rock is definitely like those being like the large umbrellas, is like guitar driven music with drums and bass is probably the music that I listen to the least outside of playing in this band, and then also like, you know, going to shows and whatnot that we're playing at. So I don't know, that album particularly, I think for me, I listen to a lot of like hip-hop and R&B and stuff like that, and then also been getting really into a lot of Latin American music. But that album particularly, I've been blasting that album for the past like year and a half. And I think just like, it's so interesting because it does blend so much of like hip hop and then like some like sample vibes of just like repetitive, just like loopiness and whatnot. But then it also like blows out distorted like bass feels and like distorted like guitars. And I think the like sort of that sort of like release of energy is definitely something that I had a hard time like sort of capturing on this record, and is something that I like worked towards a lot on this record of like, because when I play guitar on my own, I definitely like am a lot more subdued and more relaxed and more methodical, which the parts that I put on this record definitely still do. The guitar parts that I put on Siphon, like the second guitar parts that I put on Siphon that are just like sort of like heavy distortion, just like blowing out, like definitely come from a place that like that album comes from a bit in my mind, where it's just like slamming it out there, like just like letting it just like explode out there. And that album does that a lot, and it's super, super sick. But yeah, I do just like how that album like mixes that energy of just like, I don't know, it's kind of a cruising album, but at the same time it will just like slam out. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think that definitely like translates to this record, where you do have these moments of like more like more meditative moments, and then, you know, you get slammed with something like Blue Eternal or some of the more distorted guitar lines on Siphon, or even within the same song on Is This Working, where you just get slammed with this distortion and noise, and you know, it's just, yeah, it's really, really awesome. But I'm trying to think if I had anything else. I mean, I guess, you know, North, so it seems like, you know, it's kind of been one of the narratives this year in, I guess, the greater indie music sphere, where it really feels like North Carolina is having a moment again when it comes to, you know, sort of the music that's coming out of the state, you know, between you guys and Wednesday, Indigo D'Souza, which I think, Delaney, you had a question about Indigo D'Souza that I will let you get to at some point, I promise. So, I mean, you know, like, what are your thoughts on, you know, sort of like, how do you think like Raleigh and I guess the general North Carolina area like affects, you know, your songwriting, how you guys operate as a band? Because, you know, I think it's, you know, spaces are really, really important for how an artist operates, where I think an artist coming out of New York is not going to be making the same music, or they may be making the same music as someone out of LA, but they're gonna be coming to two very different conclusions, or there's just gonna be these little subtle differences that really accentuate the regionalness of each scene. So hopefully that made sense.
Yeah, if anyone else has something to say, I think that like being in North Carolina is really cool, because living in the Triangle, like you have these three cities or towns where there's like stuff happening, and it's a little bit different in everyone, but everyone's still able to like come together and do stuff. Like if there's a show happening in Durham, people are going to come from Carrboro to see it or from Raleigh to see it. It might not be the same thing for like Asheville. Like if something's happening in Asheville, it would be kind of a trek to make it out there to see it. But like you still have kind of this sense of community, but it's not a huge place. So it's, there's not going to be like a super cool show every single night. And that's not to say that there isn't like relatively cool stuff happening all the time, but like, you're not going to have like super packed out, sold out shows like every night. And it's, so it's cool because when something cool happens, you kind of see everyone. And like the, in that sense, it's like pretty unified, I guess. And you sort of start to see the same people and like develop community in a really cool way that like, I can't say whether or not that exists in like bigger places like Philly or New York, but I kind of like to think that it like creates like a cool sense of community in the size place that we are.
Yeah. And like, to speak to that, like, I think it's cool because a place like the Triangle, like you, at least my experience moving here from Wilmington, which is on the coast, like moving to Raleigh for college, like Wilmington is like at the very end of I-40 and it's like kind of out of the way in like a East Coast regional sense. So like we did not get any like really any sort of like established touring acts that would like cool stuff that would come through Wilmington when, despite being very much into stuff like that and tried to be tuned in to cool stuff like in high school, for you know, none of that stuff came through Wilmington. And so like I had, you know, using the internet and scouring the internet for like influence and stuff was crucial, as it is for a lot of people, a lot of other smaller places. But like it was cool coming to Raleigh because like the Triangle is a small enough, or is a big enough place where like there was this really great network of like venues and also DIY spaces where all these cool like touring bands would come through. And so you could like glean influence from all of these cool artists like in person and like meet these people and like, you know, create like start building like a network that like spreads across, you know, can spread across the entirety of the country, you know, in a way, but also is like still small enough that it doesn't feel claustrophobic, if that might be like a little too dramatic of a word, but you know, it's like I feel like when I visit larger metropolitan areas, especially like cities, like American cities that are like gilded for like rock music or like, you know, just like artists like New York or Philly or like Chicago or something like that, it can, just talking to people, like I feel like it can, at least for how slow things move down here, it would be like really hard, I feel like, to try and do what we do and like at least make music at the pace that I want to. Like it would feel like really hard to do that somewhere where it seems like you have to, like there's as much going on as there is like somewhere else. So I feel like that delicate balance is really cool. Like you still get to see all of these cool artists, they all come through, but it's like everything moves a little slower, you know, like they say about the South. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I definitely relate as someone, you know, I'm from the St. Louis area and I think it's very similar where, you know, things move a little slower. And I just moved back here from Los Angeles after, you know, living there for 2 years. And the change of pace, like it was much needed, but it's definitely like a culture shock of, oh wow, like to go from everything is happening to, you know, some things are happening is, you know, it's a lot. And I think it's definitely for some artists and for some scenes, it's really necessary. Cause I think once you put, which I think that's why like the Triangle scene or the North Carolina scene is so special, is that there's definitely a spotlight on you guys right now, but it's not as blinding of a spotlight as, you know, people have done to previous scenes. I mean, Seattle comes to mind of a scene that got a huge spotlight on it that was blinding and, you know, maybe wreaked havoc upon the greater music industry for a really, really long time in negative and positive aspects. So, you know, I guess trying to find that balance where, hey, you really want to spotlight the scene and all these great artists that are local, but not have it blow up so much to an extent that, you know, your process for writing, just for living in general, is changed in a really negative way. So definitely relate to your guys' sentiments there. But I did mention Indigo D'Souza and Delaney. I know you wanted to talk Indigo real quick if we're talking local artists.
I did. First of all, fingers crossed. North Carolina could still blow up in a bad way. Fingers crossed this doesn't happen. I think indie fans are all like, right now, like, what's happening over there? So let's hope we don't turn into a pack of wolves about that.
Don't worry. A bunch of annoying indie rockers aren't going to move to Raleigh because they're building an Apple campus. So all of the tech guys are already showing up. So
yeah,
don't worry about that. Yeah,
great.
Preemptively raising the rent. They're on our side by raising the rent.
If you see Steve Jobs' ghost, you know the rent's going up. So.
Philadelphia too. Just kidding. Anyway, I wanted to ask what collaborating with Indigo D'Souza was like, and maybe if there's any other artists y'all would like to collaborate with in the future.
Post Malone. Yeah, that would be sick. But thanks, Cam. it was really special. I mean, like, I feel like I've mentioned this in the past, but I mean, it's just cool because, like, she happened to have been like a really old friend of mine. You know, like her and I know each other because our parents were friends, and like we would get dragged to these weird parties that they would have when we were like young, and we would be the only kids there, and like got to hang out with each other. And then I think there was one time we went to one, I think when we were like adolescents, and it had become apparent that we had both gotten into like playing music and writing songs and stuff. And then I think that like we were kind of like, oh, that's so cool that you like doing that too. And she definitely felt like one of the first people that like I was able to identify with that was my age, that was like all like being a kid but like playing music. It was like so severe, like it was like the most important thing, and that was really cool. And I you know, we've like obviously kept up with each other on and off over the years, and I have always just thought that it would be really cool to just like work on any sort of like serious and endeavor together, but like not in a way that I think like both of us are so scattered and like are also just doing our own thing. I didn't necessarily like, I wasn't banking on anything to happen, but I was always like, this would be so nice. And then it just happened to work out that she was around that day when we were recording that song. And also like Yvonne and I came to the conclusion that we're like, oh, this arrangement, like we're doing okay, but like it would be so cool if we had someone else to come like sing on this. And I mean, of course, like Indigo was the first person that popped to mind when I was like, oh, another voice, like it would be so cool if she were around and could do this. And she was, and it was really cool. Like it was really special because I mean, I think, like I said, it's something that I dreamed of for a long time, but like it kind of, that particular sort of, this particular collaboration kind of just like fell into place last minute. And so that was like really cool, kind of like the juxtaposition of those sentiments. Yeah.
That's really awesome. Yeah. I think that comes across as a listener. I really like hearing that because that track does feel really, really special.
Thanks.
Yeah, it definitely does feel special for sure.
Yeah. I had a, you know, I didn't have a whole lot more to say, but I do have a, I want to pitch you guys on an idea that I had. So Tom Morello, of course, of Rage Against the Machine, just, you know, got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And, you know, he has this series of online videos called Dangerous Truths. And I was thinking you guys should collab and you guys would become the Dangerous Truths Club. I think that'd be really awesome and rad. Where he plays one of his insane guitar lines and then says something that you learned in freshman year of college from your Marxist friend.
I'm Tom Morello, and this is Dangerous Truths. Did you know that George Washington once sold a black man for a keg of molasses?
I think that could be a really big, you know, we were talking about, you know, really blowing up the North Carolina scene. I think that could really take you guys to the next level, you know? So what do you think, Sharks?
That's cool. Like, so it's like, I got to check this out. So it's kind of like, it's like guitar riffs and then like Tom, like armchair politics, like aphorisms kind of thing. Like, that's cool. Yeah. Tom Morello's cool. That sounds funny. I should watch that. I would do that, but I'm trying to think about what our spin on it would be. You know, what mm-hmm. do you think, Yvonne? What do you? Didn't mean to implicate you. You looked like you had an idea. Do you have an idea, Cameron, about what our spin on it could be? I'm drawing. Well, I think Cameron and I play a lot of Apex Legends. We actually were playing a lot before this very podcast conference. And so I feel like this is very different, but I feel like just Truth Club. If we could get one of either Elise or Yvonne to get in the trio, I mean, we could just stream Apex on Twitch. We could just do that.
I mean, I'm a Fortnite player, but I'm more than happy to volunteer to hop on Apex. You know? I can never get into like Apex. I tried and I did play like very early on. It just got to be, it's just so more like, it's so competitive and
it's so competitive.
And I think depending on where you live, because I was trying to get more into it, but at least at the time, like 2 years ago or whatever, like the LA servers for Apex were really, really bad. So like you couldn't play, like you would just lag too much. Ooh. And like, I was like, I just want to get better at this. I want to have another game in my roster. And nope, just the game would not let me get good at it because it kept ping ponging me all over the place while I was trying to play a game.
Another point for North Carolina. Our servers are easy breezy. You know what I'm saying? It's easy.
That's why I'm trying to get over to you guys. Why I'm moving in January. Cause I gotta get that good internet. Cause I didn't, LA had good internet, but I didn't have good internet for Apex. You know, I gotta up my skills as, you know, an elite gamer, go to the home of Fortnite Battle Royale.
The Fortnite headquarters are here as well. So
the former owners of Bandcamp.
They really fucked that shit up, huh? I don't really have anything else to say other than that, but.
Because I was going to say, you know, things in the music industry, they're getting so bad these days, you know, at times, as, you know, in the Exit Cycle music video, you guys are all sharing just one twin bed with four people. I mean, it's in such an awful place these days for you guys. Yeah.
Carly in the Chocolate Factory grandparents style.
That was the second one. That was the second thing. I was like, okay, I can either go this direction or I can go, oh, you guys are going to be in the new Wonka movie with Timothée Chalamet. When they at the end of Wonka, where they set it up to be like, hey, just here's this origin story of Willy Wonka, and then at the end, hey, there's a little kid there, and there's Charlie, and you look through the windows and you see the grandparents. You don't see any of their faces, no faces. Just you peek in, and then boom, Wonka title screen. It all comes back together full circle.
You see Steve Jobs' ghost in the background, just smiling.
Steve Jobs in the background smiling. Maybe we'll have Post Malone playing Magic there as a little cameo for the fans, for the ending explained YouTubers, like 101 Easter eggs you missed in Wonka 2022.
A reaction video to that video.
Oh my god. I mean, this is such a beyond. That trailer looks so bad. What's going on with movies these days? Movies are fucked. And I say this as the SAG strike just ended. But I think even people in SAG would be like, yeah, no, movies are fucked. That's why we went on strike. But, you know, the SAG's on strike. you know, soon these days with the way the labor movement's going, the Oompa Loompas are going to go on strike too. And it's just going to be, I mean, where are we going to get our beautiful candies and chocolate?
But,
I guess, but you know, back to the record, I guess just sort of to wrap things up in a bit of a bow. I mean, you guys just finished the record. Of course, you know, it's only been out a month. I mean, I don't want to be like, hey, morning music now. Cause especially as we're talking about, you know, the pace, because it was only, you know, this between this record and the last one, it was 4 years. I mean, do you guys have any, I mean, you already mentioned, Travis, you're kind of hoping to try to, you know, try out more so with like samplers and stuff. I mean, you guys have any ideas for the next record? Just, you know, or right now just enjoying the moment as it is and trying not to think too much about the future of the band.
I don't really know how to enjoy anything. I mean, we've always got songs. Like, I mean, I don't know if like, you know, I don't necessarily have any high concepts about record, like an album or anything right now. But I mean, like, that was like the cool thing about writing this record and, you know, we were talking about that, the process earlier. I mean, it was a much more measured experience together. And I mean, and part of that measured experience or like measured process was like the fact that, you know, it's like we kind of took stock of all of the song ideas we had accumulated over the years, like both like while we were writing and recording Not an Exit and like after, you know, between, you know, and we had like an abundance of ideas, and then we kind of cherry picked the ones that we thought were the most cohesive and the strongest for this record. But I mean, like, there were plenty of other songs that we were working on up until we got into the studio that we were like, these are pretty good too, you know, and like there's more ideas, like, you know. So I mean, yeah, we've got stuff in the mines, you know. There's ore to be pickaxed for sure. But yeah, I don't
I mean, again, you know, mining for materials like in Fortnite, and eventually you're going to build a wonderful big base that you will get one pump shotgunned eventually, maybe. Yeah. But
all comes back
metaphorically,
to guns.
Metaphorically, of course.
It all comes back to there.
And that's why people are scared to put a spotlight, because if you shine a spotlight in North Carolina, they're just going to shoot that light out and it's going to be a bad time for you. Delaney, did you have any last things you wanted to say? Any final thoughts on the record you wanted to share?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to ask if there is a song that y'all are most proud of, and also maybe one that you're most excited to do live. I imagine those are two different mindsets, but what do I know? I'm not a musician.
Mm-hmm.
Those are definitely two different mindsets. I think that question would be answered differently between each of us. But for me, I definitely think Dancing Around My Tongue is the one that I am one of the most proud about. And then also Siphon, because those guitar parts I literally sat for hours and hours and hours picking away note by note, trying to figure out and to make happen. And then I made it happen. Felt great. And then those are also super fun to play live because they're so intense and challenging. We actually like, we're pretty bad at playing Dancing Around My Tongue live because it's a hard song to play live, and it's a hard song to play in general. So we like avoid playing that live as much as possible, but we're working on it.
Yeah, it's just really, it's a really intricate song. Cameron really cooks on that song. And I mean, honestly, it's not Cameron who has trouble. It's me. So,
I mean, that's because you're singing and you're also cooking.
What song do you like? Oh, you like playing those live? Okay, I forgot that's what you also said. I was gonna say. I feel really proud. I think Suffer Debt is a song that feels really potent, and like I feel really proud of that song because I feel like, rhythmic, like it has such an interesting rhythmic feel, I feel like, and like the kind of I feel like this, the like tempo and sort of like energy shift that like the whole outro does, like I, that was like something that I feel like I labored over and like we kind of labored over for a like substantially longer time, like leading up to the recording process than a lot of the other songs. Like that was definitely a song that like structurally took a lot of time, and I feel really proud of, like, I feel like it turned out really well and it doesn't feel contrived. Like it all makes sense despite being kind of like such a vibe check, you know? But I think Uh-Oh is a really fun song to play live because, like, I mean, I really like the recorded version of that song, but it's pretty tame, but like we've really like embellished the dynamics of it live. And like, we've kind of like, we'll kind of do like an extended jam in the beginning now that like feels really fun. It's like a lot more interpretive live, and I really like that.
Yeah. And
I was sitting here trying to calculate what's my favorite song to, or that I'm most proud of, and it's like really hard. I feel like I feel a big sense of pride for all of the songs that I wrote on guitar, the songs I wrote guitar parts for. But it's almost like my four children and I can't pick a favorite. Yeah, I feel really proud of how far I've come even since like being in this band. Like right before the Not an Exit release show, Travis taught me what a power chord was. and I'd like never played guitar with a guitar pick before. I did a lot of like finger picking stuff, but there was like a lot of like really basic like rock and roll guitar things that I didn't know. And so it's like so cool to think about that and then like feel so like proud of the parts that I was able to contribute to the album, despite like not being as like super technically advanced as Travis and Cameron are, who are like so proficient on, proficient is such an understatement, but anyway, So I feel really, really proud of that, in general, but I don't know if I can pick a favorite. But I will say, not on the album, but It's Time, both proudest of that bass. That's my favorite bass line I've ever written by far. And that is also my favorite, one of my favorites to play for sure.
Yeah, the bass line definitely thumps.
I was really hoping someone mentioned It's Time.
Yeah,
that's my song of the year.
I introduced that. Did I introduce It's Time to you, Delaney?
Yeah, you did. I think it was I don't remember when or how. It was before your Obscurity Knocks episode. Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, because, you know, I, of course, as soon as Mike was like, hey, here's a new Truth Cult song, I'm like, gimme.
Mm-hmm.
And It's Time is fucking great. I completely get why it's not on the record, because it definitely feels much more of kin with Not an Exit versus this record. But, you know.
Good point.
But even then, when I saw this, the track list, I was like, oh man, where's It's Time? Come on. Like, I love It's Time, but like, I think It's Time is like this perfect like transitional period between, you know, the work you guys are doing on that record versus this current one, where you kind of hint at some of the more like ambitious elements, but you still have, you know, a lot of the scrappiness. And again, that bass line is just fucking sick. It's a sick bass line. You fucking killed it. But yeah. Thank you guys for joining us. What you guys, this is probably gonna go out in about a week, 2 weeks. So, I mean, coming up either for the rest of the year or into 2024, what do you guys, have coming up besides, which by the way, hey, if you listen to the entire thing, you've not listened to Running from the Chase, go fucking do that, you weirdo. Why would you listen to this entire thing and then not go listen to that album? But, what do you guys have cooking for the rest of the year and into 2024?
We maybe have a couple of shows cooking up for January, but the only thing that we really can say for sure right now is just that we're gonna finally put all of our merch up on Bandcamp probably next week. So
yeah,
see that, because we have been pretty slow on the uptake with that one, but
I got the long sleeve. I got the long sleeve with the record. It's a sick t-shirt. Hey. I'm probably, again, like I as soon as I got that, I wore that to whatever. I think I got that and I was like, all right, I'm going to a show tonight. Just throw on this long sleeve. Hope somebody knows who someone comes up to me. But yeah,
my
again,
mom was wearing that shirt today.
Hell yeah. I gotta figure out what to do. Like, because I still have the magic card. I gotta figure out how I need to like maybe display that like the baseball card collectors do. Get like a glass casing for it. You know, make sure it's in proper mint condition always, because the value is gonna go way up. You know, because eventually, and you know, we didn't discuss this because this is before we start recording. But I did say you guys should invest in the metaverse, the crypto space, and making a Truth Club NFT. I think that could be, again, a really good big thing for your band. So
Truth Coin.
Yeah, that would be a really valuable contribution to the world. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got again all these tech people are coming to North Carolina. You got to compete with them, and I think Truth Coin can really do that. You know, use Truth Coin to get Apex Legend skins. Get yourself a fancy knife on Counter-Strike 2, you know?
It would be kind of cool to have like a skin, like a Fortnite or Apex skin. Like if I could play as like Elise, that would be really funny. That would be really fun.
I'd literally sell my soul to make that happen.
But yeah, thank you guys for joining us. Any last things you want to say to our listeners before we head out?
Just thanks for listening to the record, and thank you both for your kind words and for having us. Yeah, thanks for and the great questions. Yeah,
thank you.
Ditto.
Again, Truth Club, go listen to Running from the Chase, you weirdos. If you listen to this entire thing, go listen to that album. One of the best albums of the damn year. Again, it'll be placing high on my own album of the year list. So thank you guys for joining us, and thank you listeners for listening. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.